verses 10 through 31 of the final chapter of the book of Proverbs comprised a poem. We've been spending the last few weeks looking through chapters 10 through 30, and we've been observing all those short, pithy sayings that we know of as proverbs. Many of them are simply one sentence long. Some of them comprise two or three verses grouped together. But for many weeks, we've been looking at passages that are not closely linked together through the book. Here, we come to a passage that is more like those early chapters, the first nine chapters, where we studied about 18 extended discourses on the subject of wisdom. Well, here is an extended poem on the subject of wisdom. It's an acrostic poem. That means that for us looking at this, if we were to have a Hebrew Bible in front of us, we would note, if we knew our Hebrew alphabet, that each verse began with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. 22 verses, 22 letters. And so it would proceed. Now, the most famous passage in Scripture that works on that basis is Psalm 119, the longest chapter in Scripture. And there, what you find is that there are poems, a series of 22 poems, and each one of those poems has about 8 verses, and each one of those verses begins with the same letter. So the first poem uses Aleph, the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and so it works through to the end. But there are many other passages. Some commentators note that Psalm 112 would be something of a parallel to Proverbs 31. It addresses men and the wise man, the wise husband, whereas Proverbs 31 addresses the excellent wife. But what is this passage? Beyond being an acrostic poem, what theme does it cover? And for what purpose? Many will say that here in these verses are presented to us a model for women to aspire to. Others might say, well, this is a guide for men to evaluate a prospective wife by. Now, both of those, to a certain extent, are true. Every woman ought to aspire to the model that is presented to us here. And every man ought to bear in mind this guide, this presentation of what a woman should be like. But we must remember that what is presented to us here is what we might term the ideal wife. Not necessarily the real wife. By that I mean that here we have perfection. And we live in a world that is devoid of perfection. That is marred by sin. So if you have looked at this chapter in the book of Proverbs as a woman and have become discouraged by it and the standard that you feel that it sets for you, remember that you're not necessarily expected to meet up to reach this standard in every area of your own life. This is nevertheless something to aspire to, something to work towards. And if as a man you've been discouraged by the fact that your wife or people that you thought about in that context of looking for a wife and you think, well, I can't find anyone, Well, don't be surprised, because you're not necessarily expected to find someone that meets every one of these characteristics in the fullness and perfection that is found here. You see, what is presented to us here is a picture of wisdom's attributes. This is a return to some of the themes that we found in those early chapters. Who did we meet there in those early chapters? We met a person that we referred to as woman wisdom. A picture for us of wisdom in human form. Well, that's what we find here in this 31st chapter. Here is a picture of wisdom's attributes, and therefore, as we work our way through this, both men and women ought to be able to see in this a model for themselves to embrace and to aspire to and to look for in others. Now, certainly, this book of Proverbs, we've observed, has been addressed to young men, and therefore it shouldn't surprise us that wisdom is clothed in feminine attire. Also, we've observed that this is the father's teaching for his son. And so most of the book has been addressed to a son, to help a son navigate life. Here, the conclusion of this book, we find a helpful passage that perhaps more easily can be related to by women. Nevertheless, this is a passage for all. There are three things that I want to observe here as we work our way through. And we're not going to look at this in any great depth. I'm not going to explain every sentence, every characteristic, every aspect of this woman's life as it's presented to us. But the first thing I want you to observe is that this woman is desirable. Woman wisdom is desirable. Wisdom is desirable. Three reasons are given for that by the compiler of this book. The first reason he gives is that this woman is a rare find. An excellent wife. Who can find? You come to the end of the chapter and you think, well, no one. She's far more precious than jewels. Why are jewels precious? Because they are rare. Intrinsically, there's not a lot different between a diamond and a lump of coal. But diamonds are precious. Not only because they're more beautiful than a lump of coal, but also because they're more difficult to find and they're more difficult to present in their beauty. Not to mention all the other rare stones, valuable stones, gems, which are even more difficult to come by and precious because of their rarity. You know, what the writer is saying is, this is someone worth searching for. This is someone worth being patient in finding. It's not like the first stone you turn over underneath, basking on a red cushion, you're going to find a glorious gemstone that you've done nothing to work towards discovering. It's just been lying there. No, the writer's telling us that this excellent wife, who is such a rarity, is precious because you have to search. You have to be patient. You have to work hard. And as we've already observed, if this is speaking about wisdom, wisdom isn't something that just comes naturally and easily. It's something that must be taught, and it's something that must be practiced. Time and time again in those early chapters, the same kind of language was used to describe wisdom. That she is to be searched for as for hidden treasure. And once found, she is to be held on to, hidden away in safety, because she is so rare. She is desirable for her value. She's also, in the second place, desirable because she is trustworthy. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She's a person that this man can have full confidence in. That what she sets her hand to do, she will persevere in until she wins through. Incidentally, some commentators note that the language of this poem is that of a hero coming back from war. It's a victory song. And yet it's not being applied to a warrior fresh back from the battle. It's being applied to a woman working in the home. Well, that actually tells us something about what the life of a woman working in the home is like. It is like a battle. There are victories to be won. And here is a husband who can trust in his wife because she will persevere. She will fight those battles. She will gain the victory. And he will be the recipient of the blessings that come on the heels of victory. She's trustworthy. And in the third place, she is desirable because she is not self-serving, but self-sacrificing. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She thinks of him. She seeks in everything she does to do him good. She doesn't think of herself. She thinks of him and what will benefit him and what will be a blessing to him. And so she lives. And this is what wisdom does. Wisdom, we've observed, brings riches and wealth and honour. All of these things accompany wisdom. They bring blessing to a person who has wisdom. Wisdom then is desirable. And wisdom is trustworthy. We can rely upon the principles that wisdom teaches us. Because those principles are blessed by God. So woman wisdom, a wise woman, is desirable. In the second place, and it's implicit in all that I've already said, this woman who is described for us in this 31st chapter of Proverbs is wise. Indeed, this woman embodies wisdom. She is, as it were, the personification of wisdom. By that I mean, we've looked at a whole series of topics as we've considered this book. And what we find here is that this woman is applying the teaching of the rest of the book of Proverbs. So, in a sense, what we find is that this very last chapter, we are presented with a person who is applying in practice the teaching of the book. She embodies the teaching of the book of Proverbs. That's not to say that we can look at the topics that we went through. We looked at alcohol, for example, its use and abuse. We looked at authority. We looked at the relationship between husbands and wives and parents and children. We looked at the use of words. We looked at a whole series of topics. I'm not saying that we could actually go through this passage and see how this woman dealt with alcohol. There's actually no mention of alcohol here. But what I am saying is that, in principle, this woman is applying wisdom in her life. She embodies the teaching of this book. And there are various aspects that very clearly demonstrate that. Some of the greatest themes that run through the book of Proverbs are being applied in the life of this woman here. For example, in the first place, she is not lazy. That is a repeated theme throughout the book of Proverbs. The fool is lazy. The wise person is not. And this woman is by no means a lazy person. There is no way that you could read these verses and come away thinking she's got it easy. She may well be wealthy. She, after all, makes for herself garments that are rich, lush. She clothes her children in scarlet. She makes purple clothing for herself. Well, purple clothing was reserved for royalty because it was so expensive. Well, yes, she's a wealthy woman, but do you notice something about this passage? Despite her great wealth, she's not a lazy person. She doesn't sit around in her mansion ordering her servants around while gossiping with her neighbours. She's industrious. Verse 27 tells us she looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Oh no, quite the contrary. We're told in verse 13, she seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She doesn't just allot various jobs to her servants. She actually is involved in the work herself. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She works out the best way of getting the best products to present to her family. Verse 17, she dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. This is language that we are more familiar with being applied to men, and particularly men in warfare. Active men, hard-working men, men of the land. You see, she doesn't just sit lazing around doing nothing. She is so active that she can be described as making her arms strong. She's got muscle because she applies herself. Verse 19, she puts her hand to the distaff and her hands hold the spindle. She sought the wool and the flax. And here we see her then, weaving her garments. No, she's not a lazy person, you see. She's the hard-working person that the book of Proverbs praises. In the second place, she plans and is methodical in the way that she does things. She doesn't just let life come to her. She goes out and greets it. But she plans for various eventualities as well. She considers a field and buys it, we're told in verse 16. And with the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. In verse 18, we're told she perceives that her merchandise is profitable. She sees that what she is doing is bringing in dividends. So she applies herself even more. Her lamp doesn't go out at night. Verse 21, she is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. It wasn't common for it to snow, but this woman wasn't going to allow the chance to catch her out. She ensured that her family were properly provided for, so that whatever eventuality arose, she had made adequate preparation. She planned. Verse 24. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. She's involved in trade, but this isn't chance trading. She's purposeful in her trading. She makes these garments for the purpose of meeting with the merchant to sell them. She's methodical. She seeks out the raw product. She works on it herself. She trades with the merchants. So strength and dignity are her clothing. And she laughs at time to come. She doesn't need to worry about the future because she's applying, you see, the principles of Proverbs regarding hard work, but also regarding being careful, methodical, and planning for the future. Yes, of course, we acknowledge that there are things that arise that are completely out of our control, and God does call us to go through times of suffering at times. We've already considered this in more detail. But here's a woman who is applying the wisdom of this book. In the third place, she understands her responsibilities, particularly her responsibilities as a wife and a mother. And she takes those responsibilities seriously, and she applies herself to meeting those responsibilities carefully. For example, she understands her responsibility to provide for her family. Verse 15, she rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidservants. Isn't that interesting? Despite her wealth, despite her prosperity, she gives a thought to the servants in her household and ensures that they too are provided for, not just her own children. Verse 21, she is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. We've already considered that. She's providing for them. Verse 27, we've looked at this before. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. You see, she understands her responsibility as a wife and mother in the home. She makes provision. Here's another area that she understands her responsibility, and that is in education. Verse 26, she opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She recognizes, you see, that she has a responsibility to raise her children with wisdom and kindness, nobleness. No doubt, too, she presents to her servants an example in wisdom and kindness, and in that way she trains them also in this area. But she recognizes the responsibility that lies on all parents to raise their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, to use another biblical phrase. She's applying the commandment that we find in Deuteronomy chapter 6, that parents are to teach their children the ways of the Lord. Here she is doing it. She recognizes her responsibility as a mother. She also recognizes her responsibility towards her husband in complimenting him. She is a helper suitable to him. We find that expressed in verse 23. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. You see, all the work that she is doing in the home is freeing him up to take leadership responsibility as an elder of the city. That's what it means to sit in the gate. The gate was the place where people came to have judicial sentence passed, to have controversies settled, to have wisdom imparted, to have guidance given, judgments made. And here is this man, an elder in society. He sits there with those who are highly respected. How has he got there? Because his wife has fulfilled her responsibilities in the home so that he isn't having to chase around doing many of these things that she is doing. Some of them perfectly legitimate things. Perhaps it should have been him searching out a field, considering it, buying it, planting it, harvesting it. But you see, she's done that so that he can sit at the gate, doing what may be considered more important things. She is complimenting him so that his wisdom and his maturity and his giftedness can be used in that sphere. And then, too, she understands her responsibility towards her husband in making herself attractive. Now, I realize that I may be catching at straws here, particularly given that verse 30 tells us that charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. But you see, this book, the Bible, does not ignore beauty. In fact, it praises beauty in the right context. What verse 30 is telling us is that there's something far more important than beauty. There's something that's far more lasting than beauty. And that is the fear of the Lord. But nevertheless, this woman, who may not be a woman of remarkable beauty, but nevertheless, we're told that she makes bed coverings for herself and clothes herself in fine linen and purple. Now, she works hard. But when her husband comes home from his work at the gates, what does he come home to? A dowdy woman? No, he doesn't. He comes home to an attractive woman who has made herself ready for him, has prepared herself for him, has made herself desirable to him. You see, this is the language that we find echoed earlier by woman wisdom, who has spread her bed with rich cloth from Egypt. This is a woman who is readying herself for an amorous encounter with her husband. You see, she recognizes her responsibilities. She understands that she is a wife and a mother, and her business acumen, her wisdom and learning is being used for the benefit of her household, of her children, of her husband. Because her responsibility is to them, to bless them, to provide for them. And so she is this woman who her husband trusts, who does him good and not harm all the days of his life. So she's not a lazy person, she's hardworking. She plans and is methodical. She understands her responsibilities. And a fourth example I want to give you of her embodiment of the wisdom that is taught in this book is the fact that she is generous and caring of the needy. We've already observed that she takes into account the servants in her house. And though she is wealthy, and though she has every right to command them, she herself rises while it is yet night to provide portions for them. But furthermore, we see in verse 20 that she opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. And we've seen time and time and time again in this book of Proverbs that those who have a tight fist are seen to be fools, whereas those who are generous with their goods are considered wise. That those who look to the needs of the poor are praised, while those who turn away from them are considered to be fools. Here is a woman then who embodies wisdom, for she opens her hand to the poor. She's generous to the poor. She reaches out her hands to the needy. There's the idea here of actually looking for them, searching for them, providing for them in that way. She doesn't just wait for them to come to her. She reaches out to them. And so she uses of the wealth that she has been blessed with, not only to bless her family, to bless others in need also. So she is the embodiment of the wisdom teaching that we find in this book. She has learned it and she is applying it. And because of that, we find in the third place that she is worthy of praise. She is worthy of praise. We're told in verse 28 that her children rise up and bless her. It's not just a simple thanks, Mom. But there's the idea here of being more publicly acknowledged. They rise up and bless her. Her husband also, he praises her. Oh yes, there are many women who have done excellently, but you surpass them all. And the community also praises her. It isn't just her husband who is known at the city gate. He is known in part because she is known. And verse 31 calls for the community to give her of the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates, as well as praise her husband. She is worthy of praise, for she is a desirable person who embodies wisdom. And this is what we all are to aspire to. We all are to search for wisdom and adorn ourselves with wisdom. We all are to apply the teaching of this book to our lives so that we too may be worthy of praise. And the foundation then for all of this, we are told, begins with a fear of the Lord. A woman who fears the Lord is to be praised, for the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's the starting point of wisdom. You can apply all the rest of the teaching of this book of Proverbs, but if it's if it's divorced from a fear of the Lord, it has no real foundation. This must be the starting point. Indeed, we can say more than that. It's not just the starting point, it's also the end. And every point in between. Constantly along the way, wisdom must be foundational. Founded upon the fear of the Lord, a right relationship with the Lord. It is only this kind of relationship with the Lord that can provide the strength to apply wisdom consistently. It is only on the foundation of a right relationship with the Lord that wise choices will be made. It is only on the foundation of a right relationship with the Lord that a right relationship with husband or wife, parents or children can develop. It is only in a right relationship with the Lord that we can rightly understand the world around us and be able to properly engage it, engage with it, to meet its needs. And it is only upon the basis of a right relationship with the Lord that we finally have any basis on which to be praised. Because our lives will not be praiseworthy, ultimately, apart from the Lord. And it will be a praise that we immediately upon receiving will direct to the Lord. For he is our all. He is our everything. And we will know that without him we could do nothing. So if you look at this passage and you think to yourself, as a woman, as a young woman, as a girl, I want to be like this woman, then you must start where this woman started, with a fear of the Lord, with a right relationship with the living God, with a right relationship with Jesus, who is the embodiment of the living God in the flesh, and who the New Testament describes for us as the wisdom of God. That's where you must start. Cultivate a right relationship with Jesus, and all of these other things will flow out from that. If you look at this passage in, as a man, as a husband, as a young man, as a boy, and you think to yourself, you know, I would love to have a wife like that, then make yourself a man who is worthy of such a wife as this. You too need to begin with the fear of the Lord, with the right relationship with God, with an intimate union with Jesus. And when you cultivate that relationship with Jesus, then your own life will take on the character of Jesus, and a woman like this won't be afraid of uniting with you. But let's face it, what woman of wisdom wants to unite with a fool? So make yourself a man of wisdom by cultivating a right relationship with Jesus and living by his word. Here is the woman who fears the Lord. She's not easy to come by. Whether you are the woman who seeks to fear the Lord in such a way as this, it will take hard work. Or whether you are a man who longs for such a woman, it will take hard work. But by the grace of God, these things are not presented to us as ideals that can never be achieved. They are presented to us as realities that can be ours when we cultivate a right relationship with the living God. May he receive all the glory and praise.